This is the Capital Toyota Sports Ticket, the only local sports talk show in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Now, here's Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger on 1430 KYKN.
Happy Friday evening and welcome to the Sports Ticket. Hunter and Mike in here, and this segment being brought to you by Mercedes Sprinter Van of Salem.
I love those guys. They're fun.
Well, you know, I'm kind of going with this mild winter so far.
Yeah.
I'm going, you know, it's like there's not bad weather, not too rainy. I mean, we're going to get a little more rain this weekend.
Take the studs off. But they're noisy.
That's right. But, you know, you don't need studs on if you just go and buy a Mercedes Sprinter van. Come on.
Don't get me started on studs.
I just worry come later this year, the fire dangers in the water situation, things like that. Hopefully we'll see a bit of snow, because I think last I heard was like 30% of normal in the mountains. And
so you're hoping for snow so you can maybe rent that Mercedes van and go up on the San Ian Pass. Give it a twirl.
That's right. Just let it slide around a little bit. All right.
The sports guy needs a car for the weekend once in a while. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. You got to make those special trips when you got to go see, you know, big things are happening.
Yes.
You know, I mean, like last weekend, you could have driven all the way to San Francisco, you know.
No, I don't think so.
No, you wouldn't.
I love right where I was sitting.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard, there was this little football game last Sunday to kind of wrap up the year.
Yes.
In the world of
football.
It's
become a tradition.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things like 60 years now or something they've done.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time. I got to watch the first two in color. Key Color TV was brand new in 66. Mm-hmm. And our neighbors had a color TV. We didn't in the Hood River Valley. So we got to go down to Pete and Claire's and watch the Super Bowl. The first two, they loved having us. That was before there were Super Bowl parties and before they called it the Super Bowl.
So you invented the Super Bowl parties.
Oh, kind of. not in Odell, Oregon. You don't do it.
Yeah, little known history facts.
No, but it really takes me back to the first two Green Bay games. They beat the Kansas City Chiefs, then they beat the Raiders, and then they were out for a while. But that's why I've been a Packer fan since then, and a Green Bay and an AFL fan. I was, because it started with the AFL versus the NFL, became a fan of the Chiefs and a couple other AFL teams, and it stands to this day. But we saw a semi-boring first half, and we saw Seattle come unleashed in the second half, especially their defense.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It was a defensive-minded game the whole way through. I know a lot of people kind of, it's nationally, it's like, well, it wasn't that great a game. I'm sitting there going, you know, not being a Seattle fan or not being a New England fan, you can understand it. But at the same time, I've seen a lot less entertaining Super Bowls than this one in my years.
Well, you know, and then Seattle immediately loses their offensive coordinator, which I figured they would. Clint Kubiak has been up and coming for years, and now they've already interviewed four guys for the new OC spot up there. But that's a solid bunch. I have a feeling they could see the NFC Finals again next year.
Yeah, well, if they can keep the defense together, I think, I'm going to draw the blank name, the player that got the penalty against the Rams, which kept the Rams in the game. He might be gone.
Yeah.
But mostly they can keep that defense together, that offensive line together, with Walker, Jackson Smith, Njigba, and Sam Darnold. There's no reason to think they can't get back.
Did you know that his quarterback number two, I can't remember his last name anyway, they were high school stars in the same league and have known each other since they went through the All-Star. And then when they picked their respective colleges, they were like a year apart.
Yeah, well, I think with the Seahawks have shown the importance of having a backup. In this last year especially, we saw a lot of it. The importance of your backup quarterback being able to really fill that hole. I mean, you remember the back with Russell Wilson when he went down, Geno Smith was able to step in and take over, you know, in games when needed without missing a beat. And that led to Geno Smith having the job in Seattle when Russell Wilson was traded. And we saw, you know, even with Denver, it's like they went into a playoff game with their backup quarterback and had the utmost confidence in him. And if it hadn't been for a blizzard, they might have actually won that game.
Exactly. And then here's the well-traveled Russell Wilson after 13 seasons, I think, looking at another team. And there's already a rumor that Shedeur Sanders better check his locker because they're thinking about bringing him in to, for one, maybe two seasons, to take the former Oregon Duck Dylan and move him up and make him a better quarterback, or maybe Shador too. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, Shador made the Pro Bowl when you get down to it.
Not this year.
No, he made the Pro Bowl.
I know.
But at the same time, I'm going, the Pro Bowl isn't quite what it used to be.
No, it isn't. No, they've played with it too much. Mm-hmm. I liked it when they still hit each other and it hurt a little bit.
Well, or when they really made it something that, that the stars of the game wanted to be mm-hmm. at, because mm-hmm. you know that they got down the list a bit when a quarterback who'd played less than half of the games for the Browns made the Pro Bowl. And it was more of name recognition and what brings eyeballs to Hawaii for this thing.
Sports, it is a changing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, I mean, you sit there and you go, you never thought you'd look at the day when you compare college and NFL football and you go, you know, the NFL is a little more pure now that the portal is wide open in college with a wild, wild west feeling to it.
And the Pac-12 still isn't the Pac-12 yet in football, but they're trying, you know, those types of things.
That's right. Well, I think they'll be coming back as the Pac-10. I don't think they're going to get back up to 12 quite yet.
Yeah.
They've got those 10 commitments for football season.
They still want UNLV pretty bad. I just jumped over to that mm-hmm. because they were thinking about all the changes and the things that, you know, Oregon State and Washington State, that's great. They got Boise State, their football season's mm-hmm. And by the way, this is the first time in how many years that the Ducks will not play the Beavers in football?
Quite a few.
That's coming up.
Yep. Well, and that's crazy. But then you also factor in that when the Pac-10, 12, whatever it ends up being at the end of the day, comes back, it is no longer going to be a Power 5 conference. It's going to be a Group of 6 conference now.
That's right.
So, yeah, which will hold them back a little bit on that playoff conversation.
And so we're going to get rid of some toilet bowls here, too. We don't have to watch next year. Mm-hmm. I think because as the bowls come down, the fewer teams that are eligible for those. And by the way, I'm pushing for 7 wins to be bowl eligible.
Well,
I'm running that gauntlet.
I'll tell you what, Mike. Let's jump out to a break.
We'll be going.
We'll come back. No, let's talk about it because I have my thoughts and my ideas. I presented to Jeff, and I'd want, you know, sure. maybe your opinion on them. So you're listening to The Sports Ticket on 1430 KYKN.
Back to the Capital Toyota Sports Ticket with Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger on 1430 KYKN.
And welcome back to the Sports Ticket, this segment being brought to you by Domino's Pizza, where you can save 20%, boom, with your online orders.
Wow.
I think we might
They're still booming that out, too.
Well, but, you know, we have a short show compared to the last month or so because our high school basketball this week with Charlie McGuire was on Tuesday this week. So we don't have a game tonight.
So, wow. Yeah. I better find something to do. He'll be calling me up wanting to go out for a beer or something.
Well, maybe you just go get a Domino's pizza with him.
Well, I think I should. Boom.
At least buy him one. Come on. All right. But so we started before we went to the break, a little conversation about what college football postseason is looking like. And we know that next year they are going to remain with a 12-team playoff and then the bowl season. But we have been hearing there are bowls being canceled.
Yep. L.A. was one.
L.A. Bowl was the first one to cancel. So that one's done. I think there's another one. It might be the Las Vegas Bowl, I think, has been canceled. Because guess what? When you're looking at 5-5, 5-6 teams playing in bowl games, there aren't any eyeballs on it. And
true.
No one is caring about what's going on with bowl season. The other aspect that I said, and it was a problem over the last number of years, is one, you have key teams just opting out, and two, you have key players opting out of the bowl in order to either prepare for the NFL draft or enter the transfer portal. And I sit there and go, with money now being exchanged and the way things are in college football, it needs to be a part of the agreement that if you are signed with this team and we are paying you, that you are playing all the way through, you know, barring no injuries.
Right.
And playing in our bowl games, because that's why these bowl games are falling by the wayside, because they don't even have the key players on, you know, barely above average teams playing anymore.
Right. You get a 6, maybe a 7-1 team that goes in there. I think they should outlaw 6-6 versus 6-6. That's one of the things, right? And we're going to get to that. But, you know, you got to mandate 7. But while you're doing that, mandate your players, if they're healthy, really healthy, and not about the money, you play for the team, you play for yourself. Some of these first-round picks, I understand they don't play the whole bowl game. Don't like it? I understand that. but there's got to be a better way.
Okay, so the changes they have made, and I have said that they need to expand it because having a month off for a conference champion team, the top four, is hindering. In 2 years, seven of the eight top teams in these tournaments have lost.
Right.
Okay. So we know that's not changing, but the things they have changed is one, the instead of having the top five conference champions mm-hmm. in rankings, it is now the Power Four conference champions, all four of them, and one at-large conference champion will be earning a spot in the tournament. Number okay. two, Notre Dame is guaranteed a spot if they are in the top 12.
No.
And I kind of go, well, that's kind of lowbrow because, you know, you sit there and say you didn't want it. They did. Alabama made it this year because they didn't want to be punished for losing their conference championship game. But yet, if Notre Dame is guaranteed a spot, Alabama would have been the team out. Period. End of story.
Somebody got what they wanted. They jumped up and down, screamed and yelled, and we're the Fighting Irish, you know, and touchdown Jesus is on our side. So, pardon me. No. If yeah. you're good enough, you're good enough. If you're not, I'm sorry.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so there's a problem going into next season. I think what the college football needs to expand the playoffs into 16 teams. So everybody is playing two weeks.
Stop.
Play it. Everyone is playing 2 weeks after bowl championship games. Mm-hmm. Period. End of story. That way you don't have a team coming in, missing, literally sitting on the sidelines for 25 days or more, trying to play a team that's coming off of probably the biggest win of their season. I mean, that's really what you're looking mm-hmm. at. Momentum plays a role in college football.
It does. And you can be a great team in October and run out of gas in November, and all of a sudden somebody from lower Mississippi State has won five in a row and they're killing everybody.
Yep. So there's your first thing. But now you've gone to 16 teams. Now, in order to save what's left of bowl season, I think college football needs to create an NIT equivalent, so a second-tier bracket.
They may have to.
So now you're looking at a championship bracket of 16 teams, which can be your top 16 teams, period, end of story,
mm-hmm.
or your Power Four conference champions, and then, you know, 15 of the next 16 teams
right.
if you're looking at Duke being in that situation again. Your next 16 teams, so your top 32, are literally playing in playoff-style mm-hmm. games, which will, one, then generate action and eyeballs for that second-tier tournament. Because the way bowl season is right now, no one's interested.
And you better have a winning team in there. You know, one of the things about the bowl landscape, mm-hmm. I really believe, I think a lot of people is going to be getting what they call consolidation, and you're mentioning that because bowls are going away. But when the partnerships, and I wrote this down, are renegotiated, you know, this year and next, TV needs to take some college football inventory, if you will,
mm-hmm.
maybe in December timeframe. ESPN, you know, they own and operate 17 bowl games, and the network isn't going to fold up on any of those. They're still making money with what they've got. So what you do in part is you eliminate the 6-6 and the 5-7s. You get the best out there. Put your top 16 teams. Figure out how you're going to play them. 16 at 1, or is it 8 at 1 and 16 at 9? Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that. But stop at 16. That's enough.
Yeah. Well, and so now that's the trick. If you go with two bowl formats of 16 teams apiece, there are the top 32 teams in the nation, and the worst of that should be at least six wins. Period. End of story.
Sure.
That would be the number 32 ranked, and that's like if it's a you know, Power Four conference middle of the pack.
Not my team. League. The six wins don't get in.
Yeah, but reality sets in. The moment you say we're capping at seven, now all of a sudden you only have 30 teams that have seven wins. So you have to, you know, have that little bit of wiggle. I mean, if it's the top 32, the records really, you know, placement is all that the records matter.
Call in North Dakota State.
Yeah, whatever it takes. But now you're giving an opportunity for everyone to play, and you're not having a team that may be sitting at 25 from the, you know, from the Western Conference.
Right.
Playing against a Oregon or a Michigan or an Ohio State. They're playing in that second tier tournament rather than, you know, where they should be playing.
Right.
But if they can get up high enough and they play a couple of marquee non-conference games and they can get up to a 12th, 13th, 14th in the rankings, then they're playing with the big boys at the end of the day.
There's a lot to be discussed. I don't disagree with anything you said other than a 6-win team being in a bowl game. I think it's the only thing I disagree with. But I think we do this, and you're going to have to do something about an NIL. Mm-hmm. Every coach that's leading and every coach that doesn't like it saying, fix it.
Well, and what needs to happen in that regards is, one, you need to say the transfer portal is open from the day after the championship game is played.
Yes.
Till the first day of spring practices or whatever.
Pick a date.
But you need to not open until that day. And the same thing with coaching changes. If a coach is leaving and being fired or whatever, that's one thing. But when the coach, you know, decides I'm going to go to this school for next year, so I'm leaving with 3 weeks left in the season, that creates upheaval and makes college football as a whole look bad.
And we watch this year in particular, but last year as well. But college football, it's ever always a changing. The schedules have come out. I see there's some good games with the Beavs, great games with the Ducks. I'm excited to go to a couple of them here. But, you know, I got to say this after doing 26 years behind the mic at Willamette. You really can't beat Division III, even NAIA in Southern Oregon. That football is pure football. They're not playing for anything more than with their good grades on the football field. Classic football at Willamette now? No. But it's still pure college football. No money's involved. And these young men get out there and just knock heads as well as anybody.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's what has been created. Virtually, you have the NFL is equivalent to Major League Baseball.
Right.
Power Four Conference is a AAA baseball. You know, Group of Six is going to be AA baseball. And then, you know, single A baseball, rookie level baseball, that's your community colleges, your small local colleges. The colleges that are playing pure football because these guys need to show out here at Willamette in order to get eyeballs on them at that AA to AAA level.
Very seldom does it happen. They usually become lawyers and such.
That's right. Well, but I'm just saying that's the
or
road.
Good coaches. Good coaches.
That's the road up the highway. I mean, you know, that has been created because of the NIL, because of all of these things. You are no longer going to see these guys jump straight from here to, you know, starting from the Ducks, you know.
Well, you mentioned baseball, and I want to mention that, you know, we got the Mariners coming up. We're going to be hearing some about that, and we're going to have somebody from the Oregon Ducks talking a little bit about baseball and softball later on in the show.
Well, after this commercial break. So we should probably just get out this commercial break and let that guy, you know, say his piece about the Ducks.
Is he here again?
He likes us a lot.
It was great to talk to Joey Mack. He has such insight. You're going to enjoy the conversation with Joey because he speaks from the heart. He thinks about it. Good stuff coming ahead.
All right. So you're listening to the Sports Ticket on 1430 KYKN.
Back to the Capital Toyota Sports Ticket with Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger on 1430 KYKN.
We return to the Sports Ticket here on a Friday, and this segment brought to you by our friends down at Color Tile here in Salem on Lancaster. Mike Elliger sitting in this week and assisting the fellas, and one of the men we like to talk with a lot when he's got the time and he's not flying all over between here, the East Coast, the Midwest, and back, and maybe to SoCal, is Joey Mack, one of the radio and voices of the Oregon Ducks. And here, Joey, thanks for joining us this afternoon. We want to talk a little basketball, but it's not necessarily a happy season for that, but still, Duck basketball is present.
You're right. You know, injuries are the worst part of sports. I've always felt that way. And, you know, I think that the Ducks have really just been bit by that injury bug. I mean, for fans that haven't followed maybe as closely, Jackson Shelstad doesn't start the season healthy the first 6 weeks of the season heading into the first game. He's out with an injured hand, and then he works his way back. Then he ends up hurting that same hand, and next thing you know, he's been out since December. And then Nate Biddle, he hurts his ankle. He tries to hobble through it, play on it. Then he hurts his other ankle once he gets healthy, and he really worked hard to get back. Coach has made that very clear talking with me. Nate Biddle worked really hard to get back. He actually was ahead of schedule to return in that Purdue game, scored 20-plus points, put together a 15-8-6 game in the most recent contest against a really, really good Illinois team. And look, I mean, the schedule wasn't kind to Oregon. The injuries have sucked, and that's just kind of the way that it goes sometimes. And in a conference that has enough NCAA tournament-caliber teams like the Big Ten, that's when it hurts. Now, I will say Oregon, with Nate Biddle getting healthier, you know, there is some cause for optimism now, because Oregon plays teams like Penn State and Minnesota now at home that are toward the bottom of those standings in the Big Ten Conference. So while they played some of the better teams in the conference when they weren't healthy, now getting a little healthier with Nate, they do have some wins potentially on the schedule here down the stretch as the schedule turns a bit more in their favor.
Well, just the other night, on Monday, they put a pretty good offensive performance together, 50% shooting at halftime, staying fairly close to Indiana. But Indiana, damn good team, 92-74. They lose it. They drop to 1-12 in the Big Ten, 8-16 overall. And there are just visions of, hey, these guys are getting better. Hey, these guys could win. All of a sudden, the second half comes along, and I don't know if they run out of steam or the talent just isn't that deep to carry you through 40 minutes.
You're right about the offensive performance showing some positives, but the defense sure didn't. Yeah. Oregon doesn't have the offensive firepower to score 90 points, especially with the injuries impacting the depth. I didn't even mention Devon Pryor, who didn't play this weekend. He's been banged up with his groin. Seems like he's going to be out for a while. And so, you know, the depth and the chemistry as a result has really taken a hit with all those injuries. And, you know, Oregon just isn't built to score that kind of amount like Indiana did. And so the Ducks knew they needed to keep it in the 70s, preferably in the 60s, and they got there offensively, but Indiana blew that out of the water, as you alluded to. And so, some of it is, you know, against Nebraska, it was tied at 28 in the final minutes of the first half. Mm-hmm. Similarly, against Purdue, Oregon's right there. It's a close game at halftime. And even against Michigan State, Ducks were right in it at halftime at home, and Michigan didn't play all that well in the first half. Well, the consistent point there is that Oregon is playing defense in front of its bench in the first half, right? Mm-hmm. And so if Oregon's playing defense in front of its bench in the first half, the coaches can help communicate defensively a little bit. The bench can help the guys that are on the floor communicating. And in the second half, when Oregon's playing defense opposite of its bench, that hasn't worked out for the Ducks. And so that's been one of the consistent points with Oregon. And Coach Altman and I talked about that after the Indiana game, that when the Ducks are playing defense in front of their bench, and this is usually true, you're a little bit better on defense. So Oregon needs that consistency on defense. They're still searching for that a bit here.
We're talking with Joey Mack of the Oregon Ducks here. And Joey, you know, you talk about Nate Biddle playing through injuries. He is obviously huge. He could be a double-double almost every other night, depending on how he's able to play or how he's being defended. But there's this young man out of China that has caught my eye, and I think he's caught, and that's Wei Lin, I believe is how you pronounce it, sophomore at 6'4", just a scrappy guy. He had another 15. Nate had 15, and Lin had 15. Talk about him a little.
He can shoot. That's the first thing that comes to mind with Wei Lin, and he is an acrobatic playmaker, but sometimes that can get him in trouble. You know, he's dribbled himself into turnovers a few too many times, and Coach Altman would tell you that he needs to improve defensively. He gets in foul trouble a little too easily, doesn't move his feet, and instead will reach. And some of that, in talking with Coach, it's a result of the league that he played in when he was in China before coming to the U.S. and playing college basketball. It's a much more offensive league. There just isn't as much focus on defense in that league. And so as a result, his offensive game, he can really do some good things, but it's the defense that needs to take a step forward and just limiting the turnovers. And look, certainly there's a language barrier there too. He's still learning English, learning the game of basketball as well, at least at this level of college play. And you know, I think that he shows a lot of promise, and to be totally honest with you, Mike, he's being asked to do a lot more than was initially envisioned for him when he became part of the program. You know, the Ducks thought that it was going to be Jackson Shellstad, Tekai Simpkins handling the ball a lot, and Wei Lin would sort of be that spell guard that could be a shooting spark off the bench, but now he's being asked to do a lot more than he was initially asked to do when he got here.
Joey Mack with us here. One thing before we leave the Indiana game that you had, I was listening to the first half, and we're down by 10 or 11 or something. Next thing you know, we're only down by 6 at halftime. Seemed like there was some good momentum going in, but then they outscores 56-44 in the second half. They just shot the ball better. That was part of it right there, and we weren't shooting 50% from the field anymore in the second half. But those are the things that I think Coach Altman is having to deal with. And now you have to prep Saturday for Penn State at home.
Well, and I think with the point about the shooting, that comes back to the defense. I mean, the only shots that Indiana missed in the second half were threes. They did not miss a two-point shot. And that is some tip your cap. Lamar Wilkerson scored 41 points. I mean, he went off. That's going to happen. But Coach Altman would tell you that, you know, you can't let that happen. You have to find a way to break that rhythm. And that's one thing the Ducks just don't have. They don't have that defensive stopper right now around the perimeter. And Nate Biddle's really soldiering through it with his ankles right now. He doesn't have that same bounce. You can see his protection around the basket just isn't quite the same. And so the injuries have really taken a toll in that way. The defense has not been there, and that's where in that second half, again, Indiana was able to really pull away. And then, though, to your point about preparing for Penn State, one thing that I did ask Coach is, you know, now the way the schedule falls, you have a few extra practice days. So the Ducks take the day after the game off, as is usually the case, and now instead of turning around and playing right away, Oregon does have 3 days to prepare for Penn State. And Penn State's a winnable game. I mean, that's a team that's toward the bottom of the Big Ten standings like the Ducks right now.
When we talk about one thing, I don't really want to talk about it, but it's sometimes a small elephant in the room. I am a Duck fan. I'm a Beaver fan. I'm a fan of the coaches, and I don't know everything that has to go through with coaching, but I see fair weather fans who forgot just how successful this team has been in recent years and during his entire time here. Coach Dana Altman taking a lot of smoke. Hey, when are they going to let him go, buy his contract out, ask him to retire? That's all speculation. That's all fan banter that I frankly get sick of. My question is, how does that affect Coach Altman? Or do you know?
I don't know that he's one that looks at it. I mean, I've been around Coach Altman enough to know that he knows what this business is all about. It's about winning. And you do hope, you know, on a personal level, I have been treated very well by the man. I can just tell you all that who are listening. He had no reason to treat a 24-year-old who was still figuring out how to do this for a living anything good, right? I mean, there's lesser men in the world that would have never even given me the time of day. But when I took over the play-by-play duties, he was very welcoming, said, hey, come to practice. That says something to me about the man, and so I do hurt for him when you're having this sort of a season. Now, that being said, he also would be the first to say he knows what he signed up for. He knows what the fans expect, and the expectation being what it is, frankly, is because of the success of the program that he has led. So I do think that there's some grace that should come with that just from a human emotion perspective, but also he knows that moral victories aren't part of what this program's DNA is right now. That's not what he wants it to be about, and that also says a lot about where the program is.
From Coach Altman over to Coach Kelly Graves, where the Oregon Duck Ladies, 18-8 overall, 6-7 in the Big Ten. They had a four-game win streak, and then Ohio State kind of put a little kibosh to that in the last weekend, and that was a 80-64 defeat down in Eugene. But from what you've been able to tell, they had 23 turnovers. That's a season high in a regulation game. Anytime you get up over about 12 or 15, you're not in good stead.
You took the words out of my mouth referencing the turnovers. It felt like the offense never had a full rhythm against Ohio State. And you talk about a tough schedule. I mean, Big Ten women's basketball is as tough as it gets, another top 10 team in town for the Oregon women. But that's what stuck out to me, is you just can't win games with that many turnovers. And, you know, Oregon has done well with that this season. They've taken care of the basketball, but that was one that definitely stung a little bit. I still think that Oregon's real X factor here down the stretch is Ehisa Tute. If Ehisa Tute gets it going and continues to be a real presence inside for Oregon, then I think the Ducks are a tough out. You know, Mia Jacobs, it seems like after her hot start to the season, teams have started to really try to take her away. And as a result, Oregon needs another playmaker and a different type of playmaker like Ehisa Tute. And, you know, the other thing is I think Katie Fiso has really played within herself of late. Coach Graves said that at times she was just trying to do too much. And now I think with those turnovers from that game, certainly a lot of blame is going to go to the backcourt. And I think she'd be the first to say, yeah, we do need to take care of the basketball. So it's a lot of things. But Mike, with the Oregon men, or I should say unlike the Oregon men, this is a team that hasn't dealt with the injury bug apart from the loss of Elisa Mevius before the season even started. And they've been able to kind of find some rhythm and some consistency. And so you hope if you're the Ducks, they actually, the schedule falls similar to the men this week where they have a few extra practice days. I would imagine that it's ball security and getting into their sets. That's what they're going to be focusing on here moving forward.
You were mentioning all of these young ladies, and I'm glad you mentioned, especially Atute. I forgot how to pronounce her name, but Ari Long kind of picked up that slack in that loss, but she had a team-high 16 for the Ducks. Mia and Sarah each with 13. It seems like she was able, like I said, to come alongside and say, well, they don't have the shot I do now. Maybe you need a little more of that shooting, two or three people that could shoot the three, or does Coach Graves want to live and die by the three?
I don't think you ever want to completely live and die by the three, but certainly Oregon has the ability to have varied leading scorers. So they've demonstrated that. I mean, I even say, like, Sophia Bell, you know, had a couple games where she has been the real linchpin for Oregon down the stretch. You know, Coach Graves said that a couple games ago he had five crunch time plays drawn up, and three of them were for Sophia Bell. And that tells you, okay, something's going right there. But then to take that even then one step further, I mean, you look at what Oregon has done over the course of now most of the regular season. They've had a number of different leading scorers. You know, you mentioned Sarah Rambis. Mm-hmm. She at times has really stepped up. I do think that's the strength of Oregon, that each of them has a different kind of offensive firepower, and their different games have really benefited the Ducks here down the stretch.
Looking at, again, the Huskies on Sunday for the ladies, and, of course, Penn State coming into town on Saturday for the guys. As you look near the end of the season, we're all watching this. We already know the men have pretty much been eliminated from any type of a playoff consideration. Are the ladies still on the bubble, or can you say?
Oh, I think they're in the field if it started today. You know, I think it's difficult when you have a really top-heavy conference like the Big Ten, meaning that there are just a lot of good teams in that conference. I think the Big Ten probably does deserve to have 10, 11, 12 teams in the NCAA tournament, and I think the Ducks are there. The net ranking has been really strong for Oregon. They've consistently been in the top 30. I don't think Oregon's a bubble team. I think it's more just a question of what the seed is here moving forward.
And as we go from basketball to any new news in Ducktown, I always like to ask you, anything we should know about as this week started? Any transitions, any new players coming in? Or?
Well, the seasons are officially here for the spring sports. You know, Oregon lacrosse had a pretty dramatic win coming back from down 11-6 against a good Arizona State team, borderline top 25. They won in overtime on a golden goal. That was cool to see. Congrats to Anna Simmons and Oregon lacrosse. Anna Simmons scored the game winner. They won 12-11. Kind of made some waves nationally just with that comeback. That was cool to see. An Oregon alum in Jess Drummond leads that program, and you know, I'm kind of rooting for them just with the growth of that sport and also moving to the Big Ten. The Big Ten's really, really good. The Pac-12 was still growing as a lacrosse sport. It's still a very East Coast-dominated sport. Mm-hmm. That was a cool headline for me, just to see them get that win. And then Oregon softball and Oregon baseball are both ramping up. Opener for baseball on Friday. So even though it's still basketball season, we're getting ready for all of the various spring sports to spin up as well.
And we're excited for that. And, of course, you can catch all the news every week, several nights a week. I don't have it right in front of me with our Duck Insider starting at 7 o'clock, 3 to 4 nights a week right here on KYKN. Ladies on the road in Seattle against Washington on Sunday. The men home on Saturday against Penn State. And calling the action, that's Joey Mack. He's been talking to us. Joey, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for always just being there for us and giving us that insight that we like to hear about.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Joey Mack of the Ducks, that'll do it here on this segment. We'll talk a little bit more local sports and good Norse what else here on the Sports Ticket on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.
The Capital Toyota Sports Ticket with Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger continues on 1430 KYKN.
And welcome back to the Sports Ticket, the segment being brought to you by Bowen Vine Burger Bar. Oh, the best burgers in town.
I haven't been there for a while, so I've got to go back soon.
Maybe you need to take Charlie there.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll take a gift card.
we'll take care of you. All right. You teed up, so great interview with Joey Mack.
Joey's just a good guy. You can hear it in his voice. He can't wait to do it. He wickers out time for you. Tell him what you want to talk about. He's ready.
Every time you get Joey on an interview, I sit there and go, you've made him so desperate for the start of the next season coming up.
Well, in baseball, you start talking about it, but football as well. Mm-hmm. He's really hopeful for that the men's basketball can get turned around a little bit. It's tough with one win in the conference, in the toughest conference probably. Others will argue, but mm-hmm. you know, right now they're playing in the big. They're not going to go to the postseason, and they are all injured. But you heard from Joey where it's at: baseball starting, softball starting with the Ducks. Exciting time, spring sports starting to overlap. We just keep listening. Between mm-hmm. that and how many nights a week? Four nights a week. We have them up here at 7 o'clock.
About three nights a week now, because one night a week, of course. Tomorrow being Saturday, we do have Ducks basketball on the air tomorrow. Midday. I think it's next Tuesday we have another Ducks basketball game, and then high school basketball on next Friday night.
Yep, that's so a Charlie, great girls game coming up.
Yeah, Charlie returns next Friday for mm-hmm. that is the West Salem at McNary girls.
Very
so
good game.
He'll be back.
Yeah,
and then of course you know special edition of a Tuesday the following week where our own Mike mm-hmm. Gallagher is going to be out at South Albany.
Yeah, we're going down as former Sprague head coach and now AD Jay Minyard having us hosted in there. We'll be doing the boys around 5:30. Girls right after that. Mm-hmm. We'll have a little space in there. And it'll be Silverton ranked number 7 in the state this week on the girls' side. Boys are in the middle of the pack. Always exciting ball. Great fans, great folks. Silverton Fox is out there. We wanted to bring some 5A ball in before the end of the year because the girls will probably end up going to state.
Yeah, and we can and then wrap up our regular season of high school basketball with West Salem at Sprague High School on the 27th with Charlie.
Yep.
And then once that's done, we'll schedule a little postseason action, too.
Yeah, we have at least one game in the postseason, according to what he says. We don't know who it is. My guess is going to have a Saxon involved.
Okay, you think so, huh?
I think so.
You think so. All right. Well, we could also mention that a week from Sunday, we kick off our Cactus League action on the air.
This is true.
11:55, we go to the Mariners Cactus League season.
That's spring training for you folks that don't know what that meant.
That's right. We're not covering a whole lot of games during the month of February and March because a lot of them are midday in Arizona.
A little taste.
But we get them on occasion, especially some weekends.
And this is the final 41st and final year for Mariner broadcaster and a friend of ours, Rick Riz. He's starting his final year as a Mariner broadcaster. Gary Hill Jr., a good friend of this microphone as well. He'll be there. They're all excited. I mean, they're just frothing to get down there and start.
Well, Rick Riz, literally, he's been doing this nearly my whole life.
Yep.
As far back as I can remember, Rick Riz, Dave Niehaus on the call. You know, I have memories from being a kid. Let me tell you a quick story. I think it was my 12th or 13th birthday. My parents said, you can either take one friend and go to a Mariners game.
Right.
Or you can have your friends over for a birthday party. I decided, let's have all my friends over for a birthday party. We spent the whole day, no, not even the television, Mike, listening to the radio as Randy Johnson threw the first no-hitter in Mariners history.
On your birthday.
Birthday party. That was my birthday.
And by the way, they're putting a statue to Randy Johnson up later this year.
That's got to be a tall statue.
Well, it's going to be. You'll recognize the pose. And Rick Riz, one of the best guys in the world. In fact, here's a real quick tie. Rick Riz got his job with the Mariners in kind of an odd way. I love it when he tells the story, and I won't tell it. But he got in there, and the first thing he did was he had to beat out somebody else. The guy he beat out in 1983 was the guy that replaced me as a television sports anchor over in Bend in 1985. Kevin Young. Kevin Young later went into Portland Radio, did KEX, did a few things, and then managed a dozen stations up there. Kevin's still around, but Kevin was the guy that Rick Riz beat out, and then Kevin came and took my place. So,
if Rick hadn't beat him out, he wouldn't have taken your place.
I was gone already. Okay. They had the weatherman doing sports after I left.
Well, you know, if you're going to Disneyland, Mike, it's a small world after all.
Okay. Yeah, certainly.
All right, yeah. So, I look forward to this year with Rick Riz behind the mic. It is going to be one of kind. Hopefully, they'll build the statue right next to Dave Niehaus
No, Dave's up in the stands.
I know.
Oh, yeah. But no, he'll be out front.
Oh, you're going to put him out front?
I would.
Yeah, well, why not?
What's that?
But he was him and Dave Niehaus. They were, you know, Hall of Fame combo.
Oh, you mean
there.
Rick Riz.
Riz next to Dave Niehaus. Oh, not yeah. Randy Johnson. Oh, he goes outside.
They can share the booth
that's
together.
You've still got that one chair where everyone likes to take the pictures. Now you put it between the two of them.
That's right.
There it is. And we can all sit between Dave and Rick and relive our glory
days. And I can break out the rye bread and salami and mustard grandma. For when they hit the home run.
All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to come back and let's wrap up with a little bit more Mariners baseball, maybe even a little high school preview of what's to come. You're listening to Sports Ticket on 1430 KYKN.
Back to the Capital Toyota Sports Ticket with Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger on 1430 KYKN.
And a quick final segment for the Sports Ticket this Friday without high school basketball coming up after us. Mm-hmm. This segment being brought to you by Auto Team Service Center down there on...
See, the van's back.
That's right. The van's back. It had an oil change this week.
All good.
All good. Thank you, Auto Team Service Center, for taking good care of us. I will mention real quick, with the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl, wouldn't it be fun for the Seattle Mariners to be the 2026 World Series champions?
We're going to start it here pretty soon and find out. I'm all with it.
Yeah,
they've made a few
changes. None of the big headline grabbers, but they've made some changes, and hopefully they're upgrades.
They've got infield upgrade big time.
All right.
The guy from the Cardinals was a cap on the thing.
There you go. And before we go, for you guys that are going to miss high school basketball, Mike's got a little bit of a rundown of where teams stand here locally.
Well, in terms of standings, it's more of a state standing because that's what we really care about. We just go with the state standings off the OSAA.org website. Our Saxon girls, number 6, with Coach Lewis doing a great job down there. On the 5A side, it's 4-5-6-7 in the 5A girls with South Albany, West Albany, Crook County comes in at number 6, and they are over from Prineville. Silverton, number 7, Coach Ogle has got the girls playing well. They're home tonight against Lebanon. On the 4A girls side, Staten, number 2, Cascade, number 6, great matchup the other night. 3A, Amity's number 2 in the girls' side. And the 2A ranks on the ladies, it is Regis 1 and Cross Hill Christian of South Salem. They're number 5. On the boys' side, nobody from the 6A ranks in the top 10, but West and South Salem are 15 and 16. On the 5A, Crook County 1, West Albany 3, and Central of Monmouth, Independence, number 9. 4A, it's number 11. Staten boys in there still hanging in. Salem Academy boys in at number 6. And the number 3, Regis Rams, are number 3 and 2A boys. And again, to follow it, go to osaa.org.
All right. And with that, we will wrap up this pre-Valentine's Day edition of the Sports Ticket. Have a happy Valentine's Day. No high school basketball night. Ducks basketball tomorrow. And Charlie returns a week from now.
Where are my flowers?
Oh, they'll be coming your way, Mike. You have a great weekend. You've been listening to the Sports Ticket on 1430 KYKN.
This has been the Capital Toyota Sports Ticket with Hunter Newton and Mike Elliger every Friday at 5 p.m. on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.